Okay.
So it's recording, yeah?
Yeah, we're off, yeah.
We don't have to be too precious because we can edit this afterwards in
yeah.
capacity.
Yeah, okay.
That's right, yeah.
Go on.
Yeah.
So, well.
So do you want to, so should we start? Do you want to tell us kind of your name and where we are and sort of a little...
Well, my name's Len Thorpe, Leonard, you know, the big, but Len Thorpe, that's my only name. I was born in Deptford in Edward Street. It was known as Loving Edward's Lane in the old days, you know, one of the old maps. My father and mother rented a cottage from the house from Evelyn Strait, as most places around there. The Evelyn Strait was quite well known. And
did you?
Well, I lived there until I joined the Air Force. I lived with my mother and father were both dead, obviously. My mother died when I was 12 or something like that. Lovely woman. And my dad, they were lovely parents. And I went to Clyde Street School, the local school. I obtained a scholarship, a junior county scholarship from there. I had two brothers. In the family, there were six boys and three girls. The youngest one died as a baby from measles, which kids died of in those early days. And but they're all dead now. I'm the youngest of the nine children. And well, there's so much I can talk about. But
yeah. and your family are born and bred Londoners?
Yeah, oh yeah, they're all but two of them were born down in Deptford. Well, the other two were born in Deptford, but a different place. But it's then my father got hold of this house. It's an old farmhouse, actually. It's divided into two. Well, there are two parts of the house. The other part, there was a very old couple that used the front room as a shop. And they charged a little bit more than normal, but my mother always insisted that we shop from there. I used to go in there once a week. And, but our house had a bigger garden than those houses because we had a sideway. I won't go into all that. But it was a very happy house. It was 123. But we all spoke about it as being 1, 2, 3. It was always 1, 2, 3. Have you been to 1, 2, 3 and all that rubbish? And I went to Addie and Stanhope, which you know of. Well, that's a local grammar school. Been there since 1694 or something like that. And as usual with most of those schools, they were donated by well-known people, Dean Stanhope, John Addy, John Evelyn, you know, they were all people with money, and they were meant really for working people's education. But eventually, of course, middle-class people started taking over, shopkeepers and God knows what, the people that described themselves as middle-class. And can't tell you much more about that.
What years were you there then?
I was there, but I was born there in 1922, and from the school were evacuated down to Burwash. That was out in Stanhope School. They were evacuated down to Burwash. It's where near the coast, on a piece of land donated by an old scholar.
During the Second World War.
That was before the war. Mm. Just on the point of when the war was about to begin in September. Mm. So I said to my dad, and my mother had died by then, but I said to my dad, did I mind if I packed up school, didn't get the evacuated, and I got a job.
And this was what year?
Well, what's it be, 1940, about 1940 or 39, yeah. And then, the old memory. And from there, I put in for a job at J. Stone and Company Limited. It was a well-known firm. They used to make big ship propellers and all that sort of thing. It was quite a job quite a thing to see the half a dozen horses dragging a cart along with a big propeller stuff and all that.
Was that a local company?
J. Stone and Company, yeah, very well known. I mean, it shows you. They have one factory down in Deptford and the other one in Charlton. And quite big. I don't know, they go now, J. Stone and Company Limited.
I don't know Deptford that well, but I mean most industry from that part of town has gone, hasn't it? Because the docks aren't really. But used anymore, you know.
Well, the docks were bombed out, weren't they? Mm. My father was a stevedore. I don't know if you know what a stevedore is.
It's a shipbuilder, yeah. Is that right?
Well, it's a docker, more of a docker company.
Docker, yeah. Carrying timber. Mostly it was timber. But when the ports in Russia shut down during the winter, of course, Dad would be out of work, but then they'd go on to sugar. They'd carry sugar in and out of onto the barges. There'd be barges that, you know, the canal that runs under Evelyn Tilly. I don't know. Do you remember it? Near the old Astoria cinema?
And, near the Creekside now?
Pardon?
Creekside.
No, that's
no, further on from Creekside, where the bridge is. Mm. Messed my line of thought.
Not to worry.
Well, we were just talking about that. So you kind of finished school.
Yeah, and I got a job. I thought I was going in the main office that used to be in Arklow Road, which is a road off of Edward Street. But instead of that, I finished up in one of the offices. Every big shop, and I'm talking now in my instance, a heavy machine shop down there. You know, they had these big drilling machines and all that. And but there were three or four people in that office, and next door to the foreman who was in charge of all the shops around there. And that's where I started, and that was about 36 or something like that. It was after the war had started. And I was there then, and when the Dunkirk invasion took place, there was immediately a cry for the LDV, long before Home Guard was thought of. And I joined the local defence volunteer, and I went to the police station in Ambersham Vale, which was just off of Edward Street. I just walked in and put my name down, volunteered. I was 17 then. And then Churchill decried that the LDV should become the Home Guard. And it wasn't really like it's depicted, you know, more of a fun thing on television. In fact, a lot of the blokes, certainly in my squad there, were blokes waiting to be called up. And, of course, they were very, very grateful for the Home Guard, for the foot drill and rifle drill that they had. I've admitted when we first started in the LDV, all we had was a couple of sticks each, and I stood guard under the bridge. There's a bridge, or two bridges going over the... God knows what we stuck there with a couple of sticks, two of us, you know. But at any rate, eventually, because we wore these armbands, again, it was different from what the BBC depict. In fact, we had khaki armbands with LDV on them. But in the Home Guard thing on the television, they're white things with LDV on them. They weren't. They were khaki.
So they've got it historically wrong.
It's an inaccuracy. Yeah. Because it went from having LDV there to Home Guard. And then when the bombing took part, I immediately thought we were called up. We were at school then in Trunners Road. And from there, I went down to Redridge Road. Because the bombing and the fires and that was so much that you could almost read a newspaper in the street. It lit up the sky all around Deptford, you know. I mean, and that morning when the main... I think it took place... Oh, it doesn't matter. It was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon when the first big batch came over and they dropped their bombs. First of all, my dad and sister and myself, we stood outside the shelter, you know, we all had shelters. The borough used to come round and put in shelters, and we had one at our house, and we couldn't get in bloody place quick enough when the bombs started dropping, you know, because some of them were falling short, you know. And but as I say, I was in the Home Guard. And so after that, we used to patrol around the streets in case of people robbing and all that stuff. And any lights that were showing, you know. It was sort of the army set up, you know, the bloke in charge. Our headquarters then were... There is the top of Ambersham Vale, that's opposite New Cross Station. There's a vet's place there. And... but they had a big hall behind that, so that was the headquarters for the local Home Guard. And... it was quite good. And there was a captain in charge and all that rubbish, you know. Pardon?
Did lots of other young people in the area?
Oh, yeah.
You all joined up?
Yeah, all joined up. And there weren't, you know, one or two elderly men, or older men, not elderly. But they were mostly sort of blokes in their 20s, early 20s and all that, waiting to be called up. Mm. Because in those days, you know, you got called up and that was it. Except if you wanted to go in for the Air Force, you had to, what would it be?
Apply?
No, what's the term?
A commission.
No, not commission. Oh, it doesn't matter.
You applied
for. Mm. You didn't have to be called up. You said yes, I shall do it.
Yeah.
What's the word?
It's voluntary.
Voluntary.
Yeah, voluntarily, rather than. Yeah.
You volunteered to go into it, and for that, when you passed the necessary, I had to go to Adastra House up in London for my test, health test, you know, and shook me to the core, because when I was very young, no one took much notice of your teeth and all that thing in the past. So when I was pronounced to have one extraction and seven fillings, you know, the only extraction was done by a dentist in Deptford High Street. His name was Mizzen. And people used to say, you could always tell where Mizzen was at home. You hear people screaming. But I'm going back to the children's thing. The only nursery we knew, and when I had all my milk teeth taken out, it was in this old house in Giffin Street. Now, Giffin Street was notorious in the district. It was when you had hot weather, there were so many bugs around, a lot of people used to sit outside on the pavement. We had to go up some stairs. I remember as a kid, you go upstairs, and in that side, that was the dentist chair. And I remember when I had all my teeth out, that I'd been bent over a bucket, puking blood and God knows what, you know.
So they actually forcibly removed your milk teeth, did they?
Took all the rest of the milk teeth out.
Right.
And that's a good thing in a way, because the good ones grew. And the Air Force were very keen on it. But when I had to have this one out and the seven fillings, there was a dentist in New Cross Road, I can't think of his name, but I went to him, and he was very good. He extracted the one and filled the others, but as you can see now, I got no teeth at the top here. I got a false what's name there, and these bottoms are all broken. So that was the outcome of when you were in the working class in those days, you know.
That's a pretty good stretch, though, to have to have teeth.
Yeah. And but that was that.
So then you volunteered for the Air Force.
Well, I actually, if you look at my date of birth, it was the 27th, and on the 18th, when I was working at Stones. I'd gone out in the workshop by then, because a lad before me that had been in the office part, he went outside and worked on a radio drill. And he told me he was getting about £3 odd a week. I was only getting 25 bob. And so I saw the foreman, chap called Jackson, and I asked him if I could go outside, and he goes, oh yeah, only two please, you know, scholarship boy and all that rubbish. And out I went. Incidentally, you couldn't get in the Air Force, you had to have at least a school certificate or the matriculation. I had both.
They wanted people with some brains in their heads.
That was it. Mm. And, you know,
So where were you?
We used to work weekends a lot. We'd go in on the Friday, work all Friday night, go home. I'd used to nip home because my house wasn't put up from the firm. I'd nip home, have a bit of dinner, and then get back again. And we work all through the night and right through the following morning till 12:30 lunchtime. So you'd go, you know, all through the day and that. But it was just, you just accepted it, you know, that was a part of your war of it. Come the year that I went into the Air Force, I knew I was coming up to 18, and I then directly I finished the midday, but the whole day shift, and it was midday on a Saturday. I then went over to the Yorkshire Grey, which was a recruit. I don't know if you know the Yorkshire Grey, Eltham. Big pub there, it was taken over by the Air Force. And went over there and signed up for the RAF to be a pilot. I just went through the usual thing, you know. I got called up about 2 months after I joined to have my medical. That was quite a long haul, that was, you know, spinning around and different colours and God knows what. And after that, I passed that and we all had to swear allegiance to the Queen, or the King, as he was then. And we swore allegiance to the King, and you were given a little silver badge to wear in your lapel. And so that if anybody challenged why you weren't in the force, you're old. Yeah, but
flash your wings.
Had no what's name, and then you waited. I waited for several months until the August bank holiday of that year. And I got the call up to go to St John's, the Lord's Cricket Ground, and all the applicants to go into the flying. We all met there, and we were divided up into different groups, and we used to march to the zoo to get our meals. Because we were divided up into groups of 50, and then from there we went on to ITW, that's the International Initial Training Wing. We did some mostly groundwork there, and then from that you went to EFTS. Before you went to EFTS, we had to go to Carlisle. And there was a private aerodrome taken over there by the Air Force. And all the instructors there were made into warrant officers, you know. And I had a bit of a to-do one warrant. He tried to stop us from having a day off or something. And he announced that, no, this afternoon you're not having it off. And I objected. And so he said, all right, everybody objects, step forward. And I stepped forward and about three others. That was that, 30 days Jankers. It's amazing.
What's Jankers?
Well, you do washing up in the doings and all those sort of things.
It's all
you
the
know.
Menial
tests, yeah, all right. The menial things you do. And same as once, on one occasion I went on leave, and when I came back, it was customary then to throw your gas mask and thing up in the rack, you know. Coming back, someone nicked mine. And so I reported it when I got back to the station, and immediately I got the 20 days Jankers there. That was up in Manchester. There's no what's name, you know. You start to, I'm no junior officer in charge of it, and he gave me this sentence, and I started to protest, and the sergeant with me gave me don't do that. He said afterwards, he said, if you'd have objected, they'd have shoved it up, you know. That stopped me. And funny enough, when we were up there, it was when the Americans declared war on Japan. I can always sort of get, you know, put the two together. But from there, I caught the ship with lots of other people, RAF people, over to Canada and trained flying in Canada. But before that, we also had to go to Carlisle to have an air-to-air test, because it's quite a number of people can't stand flying. And there were quite a number of these young chaps that couldn't stand flying. And so rather than lug them over to Canada for full training, they were just put down to anything in the Air Force, you know.
So they liked the idea, but actually the reality was they couldn't stand the flying.
We get lots of air sickness, isn't it, which is not unrelated to sort of motion sickness and stuff.
Something I couldn't stand it, but it was
I was going to say as well, that's... You kind of overlap there, because my mother, who's now, I mean, she's about 83 now, but she grew up here in South East London, but she was evacuated. She was evacuated to Canada. You know, and so did that crossing. And she says, you know, it was pretty scary because they were in convoys and stuff. And U-boats were out there.
Well, the only thing we had was one destroyer and one troop ship, one destroyer. And we lost him during the very heavy weather in 1941, I think it was. And we landed at Moncton. But on the ship, it was terrible, because they only had a limited amount of things. Hammocks. And they only had a limited number, so every other person, including myself, slept on the floor. Well, that was all right, but a lot of blokes were sick and they were just puking. And by the time, I'm not kidding you, you know, by the time we got off the boat, at least half the bloke had bits of gentian violet they used to put to safeguard it, you know, after they'd puke on them. But it was quite good. We went from Moncton to right across Canada. Took about 3 days by train, because, you know, we had to start for every other train. And we went to a place called Dewinton. That was where I did my EFTS, Elementary Flying Training School. And I got I did flying with the tiger moths there. And if you passed that, then you went on to SFTS, Service Flying Training. And I did that, went on to a place called Swift Current. And I got my wings there. Something about September. I think it was September, it doesn't matter. But I got my wings there. And I'd met a girl in Calgary. There was a twin engine thing on Oxford, right near there. I didn't know which, because you weren't told whether you were going to be a fighter pilot or bombers. And so I was hoping I might go to Oxford, but I didn't. They said, you know, my what's name was Swift Current. So I got my wings there, and I met a girl in Calgary, got on quite well, a Norwegian girl. And she sent me a telegram knowing that it was my wings, like, hope to see you, you know, straight away. I never did, because I was on a train by then. Immediately I got my wings. Day after that, I was on the train going back to Moncton. And then the Yanks were back in the war, and they were just beginning to send their troops over. So, again, that was another little point that always will niggle me. I was a working boy, working class boy. But I started, after I got my wings, I was a sergeant pilot. But the odd few got commissioned straight away. And I could never understand it, and I refused for several months to put in for a commission.
As a sort of protest?
When I joined the squadron, there were more NCOs going on that. This is a new squadron, 184 Squadron. And